This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After a week in which Hull City were taken over by Akon Medya, their owner is seen as the Turkish equivalent of Simon Cowell. They then promptly sacked manager Grant McCann. McCann was in his third season in charge, steering the club back to the Sky Bet Championship, their first league title in 55 years last summer after relegation the one before. He leaves them having won his past two league games. They are currently 9 points above the relegation zone. And on this week's episode, we'll meet a manager who knows only too well about the highs and lows of life in football.
The experience of being on a real knife edge. I mean, I think it shows you how volatile the job can be.
And a centre forward who's just joined his club's elite.
Delighted to be in amongst those names, to be honest. It's a proud moment, really, and hopefully there's a few more to come.
It's the official EFL podcast. Into the Sky Bet Championship, where, if I might steal a word from their manager following their midweek defeat at Luton Town, it has been a frustrating season for Bristol City, who currently sit 16th. He probably won't thank me for mentioning it, but it is fast approaching 23 years since his own first season in management ended, with Carlisle United staying in the Football League, courtesy of one of the EFL's all-time most iconic moments. I'm talking, of course, about goalkeeper Jimmy Glass's last-minute goal. We never need an excuse to bring that up, or indeed to talk to Nigel Pearson. And I tell you why I do bring it up, Nigel, because I wondered whether people underestimate just how hard it is to stay in management for nearly, and I stress nearly, a quarter of a century.
Who's out there? Me?
Yeah.
No, not management, but in the sort of management coaching. So I spent quite a long time as assistant managers too, which I think has been a very useful experience for me. But management's a bit of a love hate for me in many ways. But it's quite rewarding too. As well.
Yeah,
I suppose it's one of those situations where I enjoy doing certain parts of it, but I find it quite frustrating at times. But you know, when things go, or when you experience along with the people that you work alongside, whatever success looks like at any football club, because it's all relative. It's nice to be a part of something, I think, more than it.
Yeah. Obviously, I had spotted that you had several spells as assistant manager, interim manager. So do you think that time away has actually added something to mix and also sort of stretched out your own time once you'd finished playing?
Yeah, probably. I think there was an element for me as well of not really being overly sure which direction I was going to go in. So, yeah, you mentioned the Carlisle. The Carlisle experience was a really vertical learning curve. It was difficult because I think going into management, having retired as a player, I think there's probably expectation that I would go into management, but yeah, it didn't prove to be as straightforward as I hoped it might be. But I mean, look, I look back at that experience now and think that not just the people I worked with there and the experience of being on a real knife edge. I mean, I think it shows you how volatile the job can be. But I have really fond memories of a lot of the people I worked with there, because it was a new experience for me. And after that job, I actually became Gary Megson's assistant at Stoke. So, you know, that was my then journey in terms of doing a different role and supporting a manager. And I think what I learned through working with lots of different managers is, for me, it was a chance to see how other people work, and I suppose to sort out in my own mind how I wanted to do the job the next time an opportunity came along. But in between all of that as well, I worked for the FA for I've been in trouble with the FA a few times, but I actually worked for the FA and as a national coach, and I found that to be a really that was a very important time for me because working with national teams, albeit youth teams, you know, you learn so much about the organization side and preparation. I worked with some really good coaches too, and very much enjoyed the coach education side of it, which made me a better coach myself. So I don't necessarily see myself as being a coach so much these days as what the title is. I'm a manager. So I think there are different styles of managers out there. I happen to be somebody who thinks my strength is managing people.
Love and hate the job. You used that phrase.
Yeah.
You knew I was going to pick you up on that. What do you mean? Which bits do you love? Which bits do you hate?
Well, I suppose it's what it sort of brings out in myself as well. I'm not very tolerant of myself, I don't suppose, which is a probably could be or should be, but I think it's absorbing and it can take over large parts of your life. So I think learning to manage that is a very important part of not just success. What is success? Different things to different people. But I think what I have to come to terms with in many ways is because I get engrossed in it, it's not necessarily good for your health, I suppose, in some ways. But I suppose it's a drug as well. It's something which I'm still involved with at the moment. And there are times that it drives me mad, but it's also something which I know in the current job that I have, which, you know, we're having a frustrating time trying to reshape not just the direction that we're going in, but reshaping a squad, and it's been a difficult season in many ways. But I also know that when we get it right, the rewards for everybody involved in it will be pretty meaningful. Let's put it like that.
It's very hard not to look in at the fact that during the pandemic you were adversely affected twice by it. Has that drastically changed you? And I don't just mean physically, but has it changed your outlook on management?
Easy answer is yes. It's had a big effect on my health. Physically, yeah, it's been a tough couple of years. And I think, but the COVID situation, I think is going to be around for a long, long time. And I think how people, have been affected in their, you know, physically or mentally by it will be, you know, stories will keep coming out there and surfacing over a long period of time. I can only look at it from my own perspective, and I think I took for granted how much I relied very much on being relatively fit to do the job. And it's on both occasions of dealing with being ill, you know, they were both very, very different in the sort of symptoms, and I'm still dealing with it now. I mean, it hasn't gone away, but what I've, I suppose, learned to do a little bit better is try and manage my expectations of what I can and can't do. And I think it's important to be very, very visible in a managerial role where, you know, I mean, leadership is a really big part of accepting the responsibility of taking a job on like the Bristol City job. So, I don't think it's affected my ability to manage. It's just that I have to be, I have to do things slightly differently. So, you know, physically, I have times where I'm not at my best, but I compensate for that by being probably using my experience a little bit better. So, and rely heavily, and as I always have done, staff, the staff and my colleagues around me. I think it's important to, recognize the need to have a really trustworthy group of staff, and that's very important for any manager, because whenever you go through difficult periods, whether that be form on the pitch or whether it be a personal situation, then it is very important to not feel the necessity to be driving it all the time. I think it's a healthy thing for other people to have a voice. And I've always lent very heavily on the people I work alongside. You know, I'm not somebody who wants to be dictatorial. So, and I enjoy that side of management. So I suppose, it makes you reflect on how you're ever changing yourself, both in terms of experiences that you have and dealing with those. And it's a ever changing picture, I think. And I think that's what keeps me probably engaged with it. It doesn't bore me, because if I got bored of it, I would just walk away. I wouldn't be interested. So it's good to find new things out about yourself. And it's all right to admit that you're sometimes vulnerable as well. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I guess scary that a person I will always think of as a Middlesbrough fan, as a man mountain centre half, and always think of as a leader with having this boundless energy and enthusiasm, that you're now having to manage those resources because, you know, as we get older.
Don't get me wrong. I've still got, I think what I have to do is make sure I prioritise where my energy goes. That's the most important. Yeah. So at the moment, it's very much on the job. So days like today, yeah, bit of gardening, bit of boring stuff. No, stuff to refresh the mind. So, no, it's nice to have downtime.
Do you think you're misunderstood, Nige? I mean, you yourself referred to yourself as a miserable bugger in a tweet a little bit.
No, I'm being facetious when I do that. Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. But look, I suppose in many ways it's a way of keeping people at arm's length. You know? It suits me to be like that. I don't feel the need to be necessarily understood. I mean, look, I'm quite a private bloke, really. So work's work, and everything else is very, very important.
Yeah, of course it is. I just find that whole dynamic very interesting, especially as, obviously, you've got your own website. You actually occasionally use Twitter to endorse a lot of causes that you feel are very cherished. So you're giving a little bit away of yourself at those points anyway, aren't you?
Yes, but I think it's, for instance, here at Bristol City, I think I don't feel the need to be, everything needs to be covert. I try and be as supportive of all aspects of the club. And I think it's really important to engage with the fan base as well, so that they have an understanding of what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it in certain ways. So social media stuff, I'm very, I'm not a regular on it, but I think it's, I suppose my kids have educated me somewhat to that it's a part of the modern world, isn't it? Let's be honest. You know, I'm not overly active on it, but I think it's the way people communicate these days. So, I don't see any reason not to engage in that in some way. And I think it's we need our fans, and I think football. You know, and you talked about COVID earlier, and I think one of the problems throughout the first year of it was the I think how people cope with new behaviours. What became a new normal for people? So football in itself was put under huge strain as an industry because the fans weren't able to be present, watch games. I think it was important for, you know, it becomes even more important to try to engage with them in a different way. So I think one of the spin-offs from it is a lot more transparency, certainly at our club anyway. We try and engage with our fans in a way which is open, makes them feel a part of what we're trying to do. And I think the whole COVID, the pandemic situation for an industry like ours, where I'm even very, very surprised at the moment that more clubs have not been into administration. I mean, the Premier League side, that's a different sort of story in some ways, but you can't talk about them all in the same way. But certainly in the EFL, where cash flow is really a necessity for us to negotiate our way through a calendar year. I mean, it's put a lot of clubs in huge danger of just surviving. So, you know, that in itself is something that we need to be mindful of. And you know, we published our financial figures quite early. We're a football club that has a pretty sound foundation, owners who have invested an awful lot in the infrastructure of the football club and in the community. And, you know, we're going to have to find a way of negotiating our way through the next 2 or 3 years so that we don't fall foul of financial fair play. So there's going to be lots of other clubs who are in a very similar situation. So it's very important, I think, going back to how we communicate with the fan base, that they understand the situation and that we engage with them so that they're aware of how we intend to negotiate our way through it. That's the bottom line.
Does the Bristol City manager, Nige, embrace the word potential, or has it become a millstone?
Yeah, potential's been a word that's been used an awful lot, and probably potential is... I'm careful not to overuse that word and other words. I think it's important to try and be as honest as we can be. So are you alluding to some of our players or the situation? I mean, where are you going with this?
To the eighth biggest city, I think I'm right in saying, in the UK, isn't it? To have never yet been in the Premier League, to have only had those 4 years in the first division, and everybody thinks this is the one. When it takes off, it would be brilliant for the city, but I don't know whether...
It would be. Yeah, it would be. But we need to find the right formula to not only... be able to have some sort of a push at that over the next few years, but also make it sustainable too. And I think that's one of the added pressures of where we find ourselves at the moment in terms of the financial situation that we're in, but also planning for the future to try and, if you want to say realize the potential, but you're talking about the city, and yes, it is a, I suppose it is a an interesting thought to think that a city of our size hasn't had a Premier League club yet. And you know, whether it happens or not, we've first and foremost got to get the plan right. And that's why we desperately need to, we need to engage with our fan base so that they know what it looks like. Because there's no point selling them a story that's pie in the sky. It's got to be a realistic plan. And it may not even be achievable, but... I think providing people are aware of what the journey might look like, then I think they're more liable to stick with us through difficult times. And, you know, this year's been a real test for us. But we're making progress on lots of different levels.
Nige, always a pleasure. You're not such a miserable bugger after all, are you?
Well, you know I'm sort of relatively straightforward.
Good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Hey, you too, Clem. Take it easy, mate.
Your Skybet Championship fixtures this forthcoming weekend. Friday night is sixth place Huddersfield, who entertain Stoke City. Then on Saturday, these are all 3 o'clock kickoffs, Bournemouth unbeaten in their first 15 matches, but have lost half their games since. They're away at Barnsley. Fulham, the leaders, have won their last four. Entertain Blackpool. Will Hull City have the former Rangers and Ajax striker Shota Arveladze in their dugout as they entertain Swansea? Blackburn, second, won 9 of their last 12 league matches. They visit Luton. It's 8v9 as Middlesbrough entertain Coventry City. West Brom travel to Millwall. Nigel Pearson's Bristol City go to Preston North End. QPR, whose four-game winning streak was halted by Swansea City in midweek, entertain Reading. And then on Sunday, Derby against Birmingham is the early kickoff. And then Cardiff entertain Forest, 1 point from their first 7 games. They've taken 42 from their 21 since and are just a point off the playoffs.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Tate.
Into Sky Bet League One, where homegrown Oxford United striker Matty Taylor joined an exclusive club last weekend when his double against Sheffield Wednesday took his goals tally for the team to 50 in 127 games. He's one of 10 players to reach a half century since Oxford joined the Football League in 1962. And I know that obviously you're far too young to go way, way back through the history books, but when I look, Matty, John Aldridge, Paul Moody, more recently James Constable. I mean, that's some list to join, is it not?
Obviously, first and foremost, delighted to be in amongst those names, to be honest. Obviously, I didn't get to see John Aldridge, but heard what a great player he is, and his goal scoring record throughout his career, not only Oxford, was obviously amazing. I actually got the chance to see Moody when I was a bit younger. Obviously Constable, I played with him briefly when I was a younger lad and then watched him over the years, scored, I think he's over 100. So I'll be trying to catch him if I can, if there's that many goals left in me.
Yeah, just to clarify what Matty means, he's over 100 goals, not over 100 in years of age. Because obviously James Constable's a bit of a unit and you wouldn't want him on your case for dissing him like you almost did there. You may have preempted this next question then, Matty, but does that mean... I mean, you obviously grew up a local. Does that mean you're an Oxford United supporter? I don't think I've ever asked you this question before.
No, you haven't actually. I am. Yeah. I've got pictures back from when they was at the Manor and the Centre of Excellence used to go on the pitch before the game, do little drills and stuff. I got some nice little photos of my shorts really high, wrapped around my chest. And I got some lovely photos there. And I've supported them since I was a kid and got down to see him as much as possible. Obviously, it's difficult when you're playing on the same days, but I've been to watch him at Wembley a couple of times more recently as well.
So the sense of pride on Saturday night, I'm assuming you inherited that love from maybe some family members as well. I mean, you know, without going bananas, that must have been a pretty nice Saturday night for you guys and calls from close friends and family at what you'd achieved.
Yeah, it was... I knew I was on 48 from the previous goal, but then it just didn't come into my head because sometimes you don't think too many foot hour ahead, to be honest. But I got some lovely calls and messages after the game, and it's a proud moment really. And all I ever wanted to do when I was growing up playing for them was to get one goal, so to get 50 is brilliant, and hopefully there's a few more to come.
I mean, listen, football is strewn with stories of highs and lows, but what a contrast what you experienced last weekend, the kid back in 2009 released and going off to sort of rekindle his career in the non-leagues. Just goes to show, doesn't it?
So, yeah, I went to North Lee when I was released, unfortunately. Obviously, my heart was broken and, it was a bit of a tough time. Didn't really enjoy football for a few months, then got back playing and scoring goals, and the love came back. And so, yeah, to come back, I think it was 10 years when I signed back on loan initially. It's nice to go full circle and be back playing for them and actually scoring goals on the pitch this time.
Yeah. I mean, did we nearly lose you to the game? Were you so disheartened at that point that you really thought, I wonder whether I'm going to have to, you know, go off and do a proper job, etc.?
Yeah, potentially. It I was working as a teaching assistant for a couple of years, alongside playing non-league football. And so I did that for two seasons. The first season, I still had it in my head to get back into full-time football. But when it didn't materialise at the end of the season, I did sort of thinking along those lines and was starting to gonna do my teaching qualifications and stuff. And then, yeah, fortunately, at the end of that next season, I had a couple of offers and I thought I'd give it one more crack. And the rest is history, as they say.
Do you think there is a point when you find yourself in that situation, Matt, where you have to find the happiness in playing football at whatever level, and that when you find it, you then get back in the groove that had all that potential, and then it kind of creates those opportunities that allowed you to build back up again and eventually go to Forest Green and then onto Rovers and City before you came back?
Yeah, I think if you ask any footballer, they're at their happiest when they're on the pitch playing and doing well. That's the main thing. What it did teach me was it kind of gave me a bit of more of an inner drive and determination to kind of prove people wrong, because at the end of the day, I got released because they didn't think I was good enough. So it did kind of give me a lot of determination to get back up the leagues and prove to not only Oxford United that they were wrong, but to the managers that didn't think I was good enough at the time that they were wrong as well. And it was Chris Wilder that released me at 19. And I've said it before that I wasn't too happy with him for a couple of years, but I've forgiven him now, and I've played against his sides, scored against his sides, and just we've spoke since. And he's obviously gone on to really great things, and it helped me in a weird way, to be honest. So, and everyone's path's different, and that was obviously the journey for me.
Yeah, but of course, you can only come to that conclusion and be a bit calmer about it when you've come back up the other side and achieved that all you have, because Chris Wilder's done okay. You've also done okay along the way there as well. Let's be frank as well. I mean, you've done pretty well. I mean, did you always have confidence in your ability?
Yeah, but I mean, when you first get released, it was all I wanted to do, all I knew. And it did take me a couple of months to sort of, like I said before, put a smile back on my face and enjoy my football again. And then, don't get me wrong, it's a roller coaster every season and you have your ups and downs. But in general, it's been a bit of an upward curve, and I've just enjoyed my football and always had the belief I could score goals higher up the levels. It was just having a chance and proving it, really. And it's been an interesting and an unbelievable journey, to be honest, to go from 7 Division 1 to the Championship in I don't even know how many seasons it was. But yeah, it was strange, really. Obviously playing in front of 50 people, half of them were probably my family, and then playing in front of sold out stadiums in the Championship. So it's a bit surreal, but you get used to it and you just enjoy it. And I enjoy every game that I play in the league and obviously every goal that I score.
Were some of those people there on Saturday when you hit the 50 for the club? And did you spot them and give them a little wave or go running to that area of the ground?
Yeah, luckily I obviously didn't plan it, but they get down to as many games as possible. But yeah, I had my mum, dad, my missus, my two boys, my auntie, uncle, and my nan and my step-gran.
A full coach load. I was going to say, yeah. Well, the bus must have to start going around the hills and dales about 11 o'clock in the morning to pick that lot up, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, we got to fill the stadium somehow. So they just invited my family. It was obviously amazing to have them all there and to see, obviously, us win and to see me score a few goals. And obviously, it was nice to see him score such memorable goals and hit the 50.
Yeah. I always think of a striker's position, Matty, as being one that's quite vulnerable. I mean, everybody obviously spots like a goalkeeper and they make a mistake and they're quite vulnerable. But with a striker, there are so many ways of playing these days. And also, if you do go up a level, you might end up at a club that's not quite so expansive, and then you've got a sort of tailor your game, or if you come in as the kind of junior in the striking ranks, maybe they play you one of the wider roles first before coming into the center. I mean, it's a proper adaptability role, is it not? I don't think there's any such thing as a pure striker's role doing it your own way and only your way anymore.
No, you're bang on. Obviously, every player and every striker sees the game differently to how maybe their managers or the rest of their teammates see it. And obviously, everyone's trying to do, I know it's a team game, but you're trying to do as best for yourself as well in that. That's where obviously talking helps and speaking to your teammates and letting them know your strengths and weaknesses and find out their strengths and weaknesses. And you end up clicking with certain players more than others, and you just have to tap into them as much as possible. I use James Henry as an example at Oxford, and I think he's got me probably nearly half of my goals here. We just seem to click from day one, and you have those little clicks with players, and they see your runs perfectly and your movement, and when they've got the quality like he has, they tend to pick you out. But yeah, there's numerous players I've played with that have that. And yeah, you just sort of got to keep getting in the right areas. It's a bit of a numbers game, really. Just keep making the runs, and your teammates will find you. And then it's obviously down to us to put it in the net, which happens now and then, and sometimes it misses now and then.
I'm glad you mentioned James, actually, because he's another one of those 10 players to reach half a century since Oxford came into the Football League the first time around in 1962. You were a target setter. You set yourself a little, right, I need to get to this level by Christmas, this level by the end of March?
I mean, I do have targets for the general seasons and stuff, but yeah, the first one's always the hardest, to be honest. And then that settles you down, and then you just kind of get in your groove, really, and tick them off as you go. And then, yeah, you end up however many you end up with. But, yeah, I mean, strikers always aim to firstly get to 10 and then get to 15 and to 20. And then if you can get to that level, then you look further. But, yeah, just tick them off as you go and don't get too ahead of yourselves, and don't worry about when it's coming, just be ready and ready to take the chance.
If you say no to this question, I'll think you're lying to me. Do you look at the top scoring charts in the division? You just start working down and going, okay, Ross Stewart, yeah, Cole Stockton, oh, Michael Smith scored again. Do you sort of go into that kind of detail?
I wouldn't say.
Be honest.
I wouldn't say all the time, I'll be honest. Probably because I can't now because of the kids. I tend to look at it every so often. Generally, if I've scored a goal or two, because I'm not going to climb the table if I've not scored. But yeah, it's nice to see where the other strikers are in comparison to how you're doing for the season. I think it's a good gauge of how well you're doing, sort of thing, really. But yeah, of course, every striker wants to be at the top of that pile come the end of the season. I'd be lying if I said any different, and I'll be trying to score as many from now until the end of the season and to catch the boys at the top.
Yeah. I've just realised how unfair alphabetical order is, because I've got the list in front of me, and this is league goals alone, and you are currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th, but you've got the same number as Macaulay Bourne and Joe Ironside, who are ahead of you in the list, because T comes towards the back end of the alphabet, mate. That's not fair, is it?
I have to blame my mum and dad for that one. Not much I can do about that, but try and score more than them, I guess, and then see if I can climb a bit higher up.
We had Joe on in the aftermath of that goal for Cambridge at Newcastle a couple of weeks ago, and obviously there was a lot of talk about his footballing heroes and getting one over his, who was Alan Shearer. Who was your sort of role model growing up? Who was the one that really inspired you to hit the back of the net?
I mean, yeah, Shearer's obviously one. Rooney was one, because I'm a Man United fan, so I've seen a lot of him. And then probably shouldn't have said that, because I really like watching Aguero as well. I know he's obviously retired now, unfortunately, but yeah, just fascinated by his game. Probably because he was sort of a smaller striker. Just his movement, not only in the box, but obviously out of the box as well. Just incredible, incredible player. And his finishing abilities was, for me, off the scale, and just seemed to score all types of goals and from all sorts of distances. And yeah, fortunately, we got to play against them for Bristol City in the cup a few years ago. And I was sat on the bench and just player camming him, really, and just in awe of him and watching him. And I think the first game he come on and he'd scored within 5 minutes, and it was just typical him, really. So yeah, he's a big sort of idol of mine, to be honest. And I'm gutted that he's obviously had his issues and had to retire.
Yeah. I mean, listen, on the other hand, all things are relative. You've come full circle. It's a great story, you know, of resilience, of persistence. I just wonder, actually, whether there's... You've worked extremely hard for this, but just wonder how many more Matty Taylors there are out there, because I was just looking back at your sort of record and things, and when you went to Bristol Rovers in the National League promotion season through the playoffs, obviously you scored one of the penalties, three in your first 18, but then hit 20. Sometimes I wonder whether football just comes down to a bit of chance that you don't have any control over. If the manager had lost faith after the first half of the season, maybe made a signing, and, you know, so the destiny of your career changes.
Yeah, I think that was very... it did obviously change a lot during that season. Like you mentioned, I didn't get off to the most prolific starts there for various reasons, really. Club had just been relegated. It's brand new group of players. We signed, I don't know, over 10 players that summer. So it was all getting to know each other. It was a new league. And yeah, it was probably the first sort of really big club I'd been at in terms of fan base. And I probably did feel the pressure in the first sort of 10 games when the goals weren't coming. But then that's helped me in the long run, like you said, and it's given me a thicker skin, made me more resilient, and toughened you up, really, and get you used to these bigger stadiums and bigger crowds. And yeah, I wouldn't say it affects me a great deal now, to be honest. But you can only learn from your past experiences. But yeah, once we did click and I started scoring, I didn't really tend to look back, and they were just flying in left, right and centre after that. And obviously got to give credit to all my teammates over the years, and putting them on a plate mainly for me. And so yeah, it was great times, and I'm still enjoying my football now. And like I said before, hopefully there's a lot more goals left in me.
I'm sure there is. In stark contrast to that sort of wind back up, I mean, I'm not one to gossip, obviously, but could you be lining up alongside Jermaine Defoe at some point between now and the season? You'll have heard the rumours like I have. Has he been sighted in the building at all, doing some, doing his medical or anything like that?
I can't give you no breaking news, unfortunately. But no, obviously, I've seen the rumours like yourself. And that's about it, to be honest. So yeah, well, I don't know how many days of the window we got left. 4 or 5, is it? Obviously, we'll be looking to bring in a few, I'm sure, like loads of other clubs will be this time of year. And yeah, he's obviously England international, Premier League legend, and yeah, it'd be really great to work with him. I know I'm no spring chicken, but I'm sure I could learn a lot off him. If I get a chance to work with him, and yeah, it'd be amazing to have someone of his status in the building, to be honest.
Well, let's see what the transfer window brings and which decisions he makes, the club make, etc. In the meantime, playoffs for a third consecutive season, would you say? I mean, you've been in the mix for the biggest part of the season to date, have you not?
Yeah, we've been right in amongst it all season, to be honest. Had a better start this year than the previous two campaigns. So yeah, we've got a chance. We're looking at that sort of top of the table. Got that in our sights. There's still a lot of games to play, so we know we can go on these long winning runs at times. And I don't think the top two is beyond that too far away, really. But yeah, some big clubs in this league this year. Some some very good sides. We've played everyone now and some top sides in this league. But yeah, we're mixing it with the big boys, and hopefully we can stay in them from now until the end of the season. And hopefully it's third time lucky, because we wouldn't want that again, would we?
No, that's a painful experience, isn't it? Let's be perfectly frank. Listen, it's been fantastic. I know your daddy daycare today, on the day that we're talking to you and recording this for the official EFL podcast. Is Matty childhood, were you always Matty, or did you add the Y because there's so many darn Matt Taylors around in football, you needed to be able to distinguish yourself and not get texts for the wrong person? Have you always been a Matty?
I preferred Matty, yeah. Tried to get in people's ears when I could, but yeah, most of my family call me Matt, to be fair, or Matthew if I've done something wrong, no doubt.
Okay, but that'd be your mum, is it?
That was my mum, yeah. But yeah, Matty, I just seem to like, and yeah, it's finally stuck, to be honest. And like you said, there's a few other Matthew Taylors, so yeah, just hopefully differentiate from the two or three there is.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Walsall manager, Exeter manager, you. I haven't missed anybody else, have I? There's nobody else sort of around in football currently in those upper echelons that I can think
no,
of?
No, yeah, those are the two I was thinking of. So, yeah, that's obviously...
It's the new John Smith. Matt Taylor is the new John Smith.
Yeah, I should have called my kids Matty, shouldn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
They're both managers now, aren't they? So they get a bit of different publicity. Yeah. Hopefully I can score a few more and get some more better publicity.
Write the headlines yourself, as you have been doing. Congratulations, Matty. It's lovely to talk to you. Congrats on joining the club's elite. It's a brilliant achievement.
Cheers, Clem. Yeah, thank you very much, and nice to speak to you too.
Your fixtures in Skybet League One this coming weekend. Oxford, who are currently in sixth position, travel to Gillingham. No league wins since October for them. Elsewhere, and these are all 3 o'clock kickoffs, apart from Monday night, a couple of the big teams languishing in mid-table, Portsmouth entertain Charlton. So, Sunderland, currently second on goal difference from Wigan, but have played four games more. They travel to Bolton. Wigan won 10 of their last 11 away, and this time around, they're off to Cheltenham. Rotherham, in contrast to their form up to the halfway point of the season, have spluttered a tiny bit of late, lost two of their last four. They are at Crewe. Plymouth in seventh head off to Doncaster, and Wickham against MK Dons is fourth against fifth. Just before we finish this week, a couple of managerial changes to report in Skybet League Two. After a run of five consecutive league defeats, Colchester United parted company with Hayden Mullins and replaced him with former defender Wayne Brown, whose first game in charge was an impressive win at Salford City. It's Brown's third spell in charge at the JobSurf Community Stadium. John Sheridan has returned to manage the EFL's bottom club, Oldham Athletic, for a sixth, that is sixth time. He inherits a team who didn't win a league game under Salim Benachour, who himself replaced Keith Curl last November. Your fixtures in Skybet League Two this coming weekend, these are all 3 o'clock on Saturday. Fourth place Sutton United head to Carlisle United. Swindon, who are currently sixth, are going to Wayne Brown's Colchester. Mansfield, currently in seventh, 10 league wins out of their last 11 games, entertain Leyton Orient. Newport are up to third, entertain Barrow. Northampton have dropped to fifth. They're at home to Salford. It's a bit of a derby match, as the bottom club, Oldham, I've just mentioned, back under John Sheridan for the first time of his sixth spell, are at home to Rochdale. But without a doubt, the game of the weekend sees second place Tranmere 8 league wins in an unbeaten last 10 against Forest Green Rovers, the leaders and only team who are unbeaten away from home in the top 4 divisions. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Matty Taylor and to Nigel Pearce. And if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.